Hey there, this is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett on Empower Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Glad to have you along today. And I'm just going right to the meat of this whole conversation, aliens. Yay! E.T. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wanted to do that because the guy who we're talking to is probably not going to go there because it would destroy his credibility. However, he does dance around the topic and he did an excellent job of ferreting out some gold. Gold. And I mean real gold. I just turned on his website and it is talking to me, telling me to take a quick detour. Anyway, he got some solid gold with the Murray Island incident. Jake Ellison, 24 years in radio, in reporting. Is that it?
Yep, at least. You figure the first few years of scrambling, getting published anywhere you can, and it'd have to be 30. But I'm trying not to
take myself too much. Who's counting? Who's counting?
Yeah, right.
Okay, I tell you what, though, when you're earning your stripes there, it takes a while to figure out how, you know, what to go for, how to get information when people really don't want to talk about it, and then how much that information is worth to you if you dig up some dirt they don't want found.
Yeah, that's it. That's right.
Okay, for so sure. I want to go quickly with, have you ever found yourself in a situation where you needed to just back off?
I have. And, when I first started reporting, I worked at a twice weekly in a small town in Montana. And one of the deacons of the church there, of a church there that I had, my wife and I were going to church at the time, terribly was accused of, and turned out it was true, of molesting girls. And I knew this person really well, and this is a small community. Everybody knows everybody. And I was, reporting, and so I did have to cover the thing because I did, everything in a small paper. And the hardest thing I had to do was, I think probably the hardest thing yet in my career that I had to do was, you got to give people a chance to respond. You know, it's not in their best interest to respond, but you got to give them a chance to respond. And I went up to his door and at his house, not far from my house, and knocked on the door, and he didn't come to the door. And while I didn't back off because I did knock, I was glad he didn't come to the door. It was a terrible story, and everybody involved. I mean, his family was devastated. It was just terrible. But I'd have to say that that's probably the hardest moment in journalism. I've had lots of hard moments like that. I'm sure you have too. But
yeah,
that was one that really, really stuck out.
Well, I know in looking at what I wanted to do as a career, the being on the front lines as a reporter was absolutely, it's like we had a tragedy in Kansas City, the Hyatt Regency collapse, and there were people that I knew. And when you know the depth of emotions all across the board that are involved in that, and you go up and you try to stick a microphone in somebody's face at that time, that's just like, what line do you want to cross? Well, later on in the newsroom, it was, okay, these are the folks who are okay to talk about it. And every year on the 1 year anniversary, we'd go dig up that grave. Right. And you just, these are the ones to talk about or to talk with. And these people we've discovered no longer want to hear from the media. And you just, it's like, okay. So that's why I'm asking, because I wanted to give anybody who's listening an idea that being a reporter is, it takes a lot of fortitude sometimes to pursue a story. And then to go one step further, stories that other people are more likely to go, why are you doing that? Don't you want to do real journalism? And it's like, what?
Right.
So, which brings us into another story where a journalist can get a whole lot done when other people don't know what questions to ask and where to dig. You did an incredible job with this. The movie, the coverage of this little film, The Maury Island Incident, is based on declassified FBI documents. Is that correct?
Right. And they're out there. They are out there. So the way I look at this stuff is whether, first of all, I covered the movie originally in a story just because it was, they got some state money. They got invited to some, film festivals. And so I thought, well, it's cool. It's a local bunch. They did this movie about this local UFO thing. So the first story was just about the movie. It was just like, hey, how'd you do the movie? And what's the movie about? And I showed a little clip of their movie and that kind of thing. It was all about the movie. And the second time around, they won some film festivals, and then there's Burien, a community that, you know, just a suburb of Seattle, now has an annual festival dedicated to the Maury Island UFO incident, and so I thought, well, I'll check in with them. But then I got the bug, and the bug was there? I just asked myself a simple question, like I said in the story: was there even an FBI special agent named Jack Wilcox? And once you ask yourself that question, of course, my job as a reporter is to say, well, is there any foundation at all to the story? And so I just started digging, and I put these guys off. I mean, I met with these guys weeks before publishing the story, you know, I don't ever let anybody else know what track I'm taking. And I don't let anybody know outside of what I put in a story who I've talked to. Like, mm-hmm. if you say, did you talk to my mother because you gave me the phone number for her? I just as a matter of principle, I don't. It's just a slippery slope about where you're now spreading information that you're not going to report. It's just background stuff. So right. I never do it. And so these guys were kind of chomping at the bit. They really wanted to see the coverage and so on. So I had to kind of drag
media,
them along.
Media.
A little. Yeah. So I had to drag them along a little bit while I was trying to track down whether there was actually anybody even really known as J.B. Wilcox. And that's the story, right? So the story is that not only was there a man named J.B. Wilcox who was in the FBI, he also had passed away in 2004, which at first was too bad because I found an obit for him. But he passed away in the town where I was born, Kennewick, Washington. So then you decide, well, I'll just have some fun with it because it's a fun story anyway. It's not like a gotcha story of any kind. And then the parallels just start lining up. He died in Kennewick where I was born. His daughter is a nurse. My aunt is a nurse. And his middle name is Billings. And I went to high school. I was raised in Billings, Montana. And I went to Billings Senior High. And so all these things sort of add up. And
the newspaper, thing.
Yeah. And so you just, you know, and at that point, I'm not trying to, like I said in the story, I have no idea what it means, or if it means anything. It doesn't mean you're on the right track. I mean, I have no idea. And what would the right track be? And I'm going to continue to, you know, follow up the story and get a hold of as many people as I can, you know, just anyway. But it was fun. And then these things sort of, and it makes for good storytelling when you're sitting at home trying to wonder if you're just wasting your time, and you sort of try your stories out on the people around you to see if it just sounds weird, or if it's actually interesting. But people were all interested in it. They all thought it was kind of fun or interesting, and, you know, and everybody gets that little kind of tingle. So I thought, well, it's a story. So that's why I wrote it.
Well, and that's the whole thing. You just did it. First, the first story would be a fluff piece or a feature. Okay, so that was basically like a superficial overview of, hey, here's the deal. Sounds like fun. Go there. You know, who, what, where, when, why. But the next one, when you got, as you said, the hook, and I don't know if you said a hook, but that's what I'm feeling there. There was a hook of, well, is this guy real?
Right.
So, you know, and that's just a curious thing of, well, if he's real, what was he like? What did you find out about the guy? Agent Wilcox?
Yeah, I did. I have now talked to his daughter, and I'm going to do a follow-up piece with his daughter. She didn't really want to talk to me all that much because she was unsure. Well, I report about, I run another blog called the Pot Blog, and because marijuana is legal here, and so I write about culture and politics in marijuana, and this FBI agent's daughter was a little worried about having her dad associated with marijuana
with the wrong crowd,
even after he's gone. But I'm like, but of course that wasn't it. I also run another blog, the science blog and other stuff. So, you know, I wrote her a letter. I found out where she lived and I wrote her a letter and all this stuff. So she finally has decided to talk to me. But then I talked to his son to answer the question, what was he like? Well, they were very, his son says, well, he was just very, I hate to say secretive, but it is secretive. I mean, the label you would put on it is secretive. I mean, he didn't talk a lot about it and he didn't bring it up. And now his daughter says he did bring it up, And what will come out in my other story is the kind of punchline is after all my conversations with her about him, he was a very loving man, a very giving and dedicated family person, supported his kids. Both kids said they supported his kids, brought in strangers to live with him at times, kids to try to help him out. Just a really, he was also really enforced the idea that you need to know what you're talking about. You know, think about what you're going to say, look up stuff to try to figure out as much as you can about it before you enter an arena. And of course, that's very FBI like as well, and journalist like.
And journalist, and so, yeah.
Yeah, and so. But the punchline was, I said, well, look, what would your, she didn't want to talk about anything he talked about because she didn't want to, because like him, she didn't want to reveal stuff that might have been something he wasn't supposed to reveal. So she was like, well, I can't tell you directly about it. I said, well, what would he say right now to, what would his answer be right now to this festival and this movie and, you know, this sort of resurgence of the, of this incident, which is based, the core piece of it is this report he wrote back in 1947. And she kind of, I could hear her smiling on the other end. And she talked about how she could just sense him like right there next to him in the room, kind of smiling at her. And she said, what he would say is no comment. So there you go.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's up to you. The truth is out there, that kind of thing, which I think is so fascinating because there was in the media recently, X-Files is coming back for like a six episode with Mulder and Scully. And so the truth is out there comes right back home to roost. It's been 13 years. And it's so all of this information that's happening right now is just this bubble of interest and big time interest. It's one of the top searches on the internet when people look for stuff, you know, after the big three, maybe it's the UFO. Is right in there. So people are absolutely fascinated. And when you actually find one of our FBI folks, a real live being, you got the obit, so he was live. It's like, whoa, connecting dots that the government or those in authority refuse to. It's like, no comment, no comment, no comment. You get stonewalled. And here are the people around it who say, well, yeah, we agree with that, but this is the behind the scenes. And yes, these people did exist. The documents are real. Mm-hmm. About the documents, what information can you give us like an overview for somebody who isn't familiar with this story? We probably ought to do just a little bit of background.
Sure. If you go to, it's on, in my story, I've got a link to it. If you go to the FBI records, the vault, and search 1947, then you can see an image of it on my story there. They're all there. These are declassified. This is an FBI URL. I double checked that the site was legitimate too, right? I pulled the site up and this disclaimer come up. I was like, oh my gosh. But yeah. Anyway, standard disclaimer. Like, we release these documents, we don't know what they mean. But here they're there. Wilcox's main document is there. These other documents they're all there, and these are declassified records that the FBI has published on its own site. So, just like they say, one of the guys who made the movie says, you know, did it happen? He says, I don't know. The documents are out there. You take a look and you decide for yourself. So yeah, the documents are out there. This guy did exist. He was real. And I had his son identified both an image of him as well as a signature as best as he could. It definitely looked like him. So there would have to be, but the daughter, and so it is him. He is there. He is real. The only thing that hasn't happened is the daughter just saying that he spoke to her of this UFO incident. That's just the one thing she didn't talk about. But there's no question it's the guy.
Okay. So, and if you're listening, Maury Island incident, this is the sign I'm giving you, .com. This is for the movie. And it's M-A-U-R-Y, Maury Island or Murray Island, depending on your accent, what part of the world you're from, U.S., South, Northeast. We all have our different isms. But if you go to that site, you're going to see this. Seattle PI uncovers new evidence. Read the story here, and there's a link. And then it says download August 19, 1947, Agent Wilcox memo here, PDF file. All right. So you get all the details on this site, or at least a good overview. And what I, you know, what I think is fascinating is that here you are just doing your basic beat, you know, and you're curious and you're doing some uncovering. But what did it feel like when you got the first hit of, wait a minute, that's a synchronistic kind of coincidence. What's going on? What was that? Is it just like a, no big deal?
No, it's a big deal. And so a big part of journalism, as you know, is you just rush headlong into situations that aren't, that don't have a script. They're not scripted. You don't know what the outcomes are going to be. You don't know what people are going to say or if they're going to say anything. And so you run headlong and oftentimes you just run into roadblocks. And I did run into a roadblock that I found the daughter and she didn't want to talk right away. And so I had to find my way around and I had to figure out if I could find the son. And sure enough, I found him and he lives not far out of Seattle. But what kind of kept me interested was that whether or not I talked to either one of them, I've got a story now that's a first person. There's a reason for this story to have a first person angle, which is these coincidences. And that's sort of clinical in a way. I mean, did I feel anything? I guess so. I mean, you certainly feel kind of excited when these things sort of happen. You know, you do kind of feel a certain wow factor to it. Like, mm-hmm. this is pretty cool. And it kept me interested. It kept me wanting to dot the I, you know, to cross all the T's. And so that's what really happened. It sort of kept me going into the story. And it was fun. It was interesting. And luckily, it's the kind of story where nothing terrible happened. You know, you're not...
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know,
it wasn't
you're
like
not,
a big
you're
alien
not pursued.
Thing. Going,
yeah. You're not pursued.
Okay.
Well, in fact, there was a very similar situation, a real quick short story, where something terrible had happened. There was a shooting at a school. I was sent out to try to find into the deep suburbs of around Seattle to try to find this guy who protected some other students. I was trying to find him and his parents to see if we could get them to tell us a little bit about themselves. And I went out into the woods, you know, the suburbs, sprawling suburbs, trees everywhere. You can't see anything. And I had my phone, you know, and I had several addresses that could be theirs. And I tried several of them and it turned out it wasn't them. And I went by and I went to this one that might've been them, but lo and behold, I had to go to the restroom. Right. So I like, oh shoot. So I turn around and I go out to this, I take 2 mile trip to go to some convenience store where I could use the restroom. And I come back cause I didn't want to go to their house and go, hey, by the way,
Hey, I'm glad I found you. You mind?
Yeah. And so oddly enough though, what happened is I go back, I'm headed back to their house from this little detour. And there's this woman standing on the road and she's got this dog walking by her, an old German shepherd. And she's kind of frantically waving me down. I was like, well, I mean, I'm going to stop. So I stop and I roll the window down and she goes, hey, a friend of mine is pregnant, and we were out on a walk because there's this big, long walking trail around this park there. We're out on a walk, and I can't, I need to, and, but she got really tired all of a sudden, and I need to get my car, but I want to get to her fast. Can you drive to my house? I'm like, sure, pile in. So I figured they weren't expecting me at this other house anyway. You know, I can come back there in 20 minutes. So long story short, I take this woman to her car, which is quite a ways out of the way, around this big park, and I get on the other side of this park and get her to her car, and she gets her dog and they bail out. And then I get back to my phone and I dial in the address again. And it looks like it's in a different place. I'm like, huh, that's weird. But it's the address. I thought, well, maybe I'm all turned around. So I follow the address that was on my phone and it is to a completely different place. And it was them. It was this family that uh-huh. whose son had protected all these other people. And I never told that story in print just because, of course, the circumstances were too terrible to. But, you know, you when you rush headlong into stuff, I think these kinds of things happen. Why they happen,
oh,
do they
well,
mean
but,
anything
But wow,
else?
Wow, wow, sure. Wow. Because you're right there when they needed help. And you wouldn't have been. You were in the right, wrong place.
Well, that's true, right? I mean, I can't say I know what it means, but it is true that I was in the right, wrong place, and it led me to the family. I'd have never found them. It was a completely different. These addresses are broken up in short little streets. It's the same street, but the addresses are, but the numbers are weird, and they're uh-huh. broken up. There could be miles from where the street ended before it picks up again because it's all wooded out there. I'd have never found him, but I found
and the way I believe, the way the stuff I've had happen that's just as weird is that if you do the good deed, if you do the little test, the carrot, then you get the result. And so you were willing to say, if you had said, no, I can't help you, bye, see you, go, and you may have had a different result. My feeling is you would have had a different result. This said, is it worth it? Are you worthy? Okay, here.
Yeah.
That's subjective, but I've had experiences to give me a real heads up on those things. And the thing about you, though, as a journalist, you haven't already written the end of the story. You're saying, where does it lead? Which is that's a hallmark of a true journalist. It's like the FBI guy saying, get the details, find out what you're going into. And that you have to, and I think science should be better at doing this too, instead of concluding, well, we're going to find this, so let's put these two together. And then they find, yeah, that's it. How do you have to be open. And then you get the wonderful stuff that you got was a connecting dot that nobody else even thought to pursue, because it probably would have been too time consuming. And maybe they would have just said, we won't talk, but they talked to you.
Yeah. The family did, and so the way and my main rule of thumb is that I've had tragedy in my own family, and again, the UFO thing wasn't a tragedy. The other thing, they actually the family didn't want to talk, but I did find where they lived, and they had a nice note out on front explaining why they weren't going to talk. So that was all information that we wouldn't have had for sure. But anyway, the. Well, I kind of forgot what I was up to there, but
I gave you a lot to work with.
Yeah. But just, you know, following that track the point where you don't really know what's going to happen. And whether or not people want to talk yet. So my rule of thumb is that I'm never, you know, I certainly don't force myself on anybody. But people generally want to share. And I know for my own life, there's tragedy in my own life. And when that happened, my impulse was to share with others. You know, you want to find out how others, you want a community, you want an interconnection with people. And so that's sort of what I'm trying to do as a reporter is find people and try to build a community around them or bring them into a new community or bring strangers into a community in as an honest, forthright way as I can.
Well, when you do that, though, then a lot of times it takes little threads and connects, you know, a web-like to other people that were already doing kind of the same thing. And I think when you're looking at this and you're finding your own connections of the coincidences, what did it spur you to do any more investigating and exploring of that element?
So it's hard. My general take is, sounds like I've thought about it. I mean, I have thought about it, but it sounds like I've sort of written it off. I haven't written off the idea that there is something out there. But generally, I kind of feel like where does it stop? If you spend too much time just following and trying to build up these coincidences toward a story, at some point, you got to stop and just write your story and move on, or stop and just make your choice for your personal life and move on. Because where does it stop?
Tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not a stop. It's a beginning. Okay, and you've got the chops to do this kind of stuff. So people who don't want to talk to somebody else are going to look at your credibility, look at your ethics, look at your integrity and say, this guy, maybe I'll talk to this guy. But that's the whole point, because you were doing hardcore, heavy duty. I'm going to do the facts. I'm going to get it right. And plowing forward, and not, like you're saying, you don't intimidate or harass your contacts. But you are legit. And a lot of this stuff with the coverage of the UFO and the coverage of the ET alien abduction, I mean, there's a focus now on trying to get word out about John Mack, the Harvard professor, who was phenomenal in the depths he went to research and try and legitimize the contactee story and say it's not just a fiction or some kind of aberration and a mental illness. Something's happening and we have to look into it. At the risk and eventual downfall of his own position. People, you're a Fruit Loop now. Now we really know what you are. It's like, no, you don't. So the deal is, do you go the next step, if it happens, when you might be invited to take a deeper look at some of these other cases that really beg to have these kinds of answers brought to the equation? That's what I think. It's whether you're running to do that, and it's your choice. Does that make sense?
I would pursue, like I did in this story, I would pursue the people in the story, not pursue them like pursuit, but, you know, I would look to find the people in the story. But I can't recreate what they saw or what they say certain circumstances in their own life have meant. I can't recreate that in a way where I could decide if it's true or not.
Okay, hold on. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk about that recreation element, okay, because that's a big key there. And we're talking with an excellent reporter who's done some fabulous work with a story concerning the Maury Island incident. His name is Jake Ellison, Seattle PI. You can Google him. He's all over the place. And on the pot blog. Yeah, that too. That's why it makes it fun. Back in a few. Conscious Living.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org. And after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home. But these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Hi there, this is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett on Empower Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. I love covering stories where there are dots and there are potentials left to be explored. And for me, the concept of the UFO or ufology, that whole arena is wide open and begs further inquiry. And so when I get somebody who's done his work on this and proved that he has the ability to go where other people may not have been able to, or to think what might be missing that would add some real solid foundation to a very incredible story. Jake Ellison did a fabulous job with this. And you can read his information. Just Google his name. You'll find it. But the Seattle PI is where he is stationed. And the new evidence has to do with finding the FBI guy who wrote these, or the write-up, the background on this encounter. Now, when you talk about recreation of an incident, yeah, the difficult part is to say, this is what I saw and this is how it looked. And you can see all these little drawings and these pencil, you know, people who are not artists who try to say, this is what it was. And they're not physicists. They're not scientists. They're real people who don't have this background. And they had a real experience, that it's so difficult to fill in the blanks. And then somebody comes in from some legit source and says, yeah, you may have seen something, but you really aren't qualified to give us credible information, because you're not a rocket scientist. Or if you are, you're one who's had a characteristic of being interested in weird things anyway. But what this did with your story is really give us the bones and the foundation to say that whatever they saw, whatever was witnessed, was real. And nobody wanted to back away. How real was it? According to the government? No comment. So when you recreate something for people in your stories, how do you go that next step, Jake, to give them that sense of being there or of needing to do their own math? How much information, I think, do you put in there to make it concrete? What's important to you in telling that story? Without fictionalizing or fabricating,
right? Well, I am trying to find. So Harold Dahl is one of the key people in the thing, and he's real. He did exist, and his daughter is alive and lives in Washington. And I've got an appointment to talk with her as well. I haven't had a chance to talk to her yet. So I'm interested in the people, and I try to find the people who are real for two reasons. One, it's just interesting on the face of it. These people actually existed in this thing that has taken on quite a layer of mythology around it. And two, it's also interesting to have them, like you asked me originally, you know, at the top here, to ask me or to ask them to find out, you know, what were they like? And did they ever really talk about it? And at that point, I have run into a dead end on the FBI guy. His daughter just simply won't tell me if he talked about the UFO incident. And so on that front, I mean, he's passed away, and all of his wife has passed away. And, you know, his son said that he never heard about it because his dad never talked to him about anything he did during the FBI. And his daughter just simply won't. And so that's a dead end. So it's over there. I mean, I can't, there's really no way for me to recreate whether or not this FBI person, other than the documents we have, believed that it was a hoax, or believed that the statement it was a hoax was itself a hoax, which is kind of what the Maury Island movie is pushing toward, is that even though Harold Dahl came out and said it was a hoax, the FBI documents, they say, well, I mean, and it kind of looks like it too. You can see the documents. It looks like basically the idea is Harold Dahl is really shocked and dismayed at the long-term heavy ramifications of what's happening to him. And so he says, forget it, it was a hoax. And that's what he tells the FBI. He's going to tell everybody. I'm going to tell everybody from now on it's a hoax. And so,
well, in a way, he was tired of getting hounded.
Yeah.
It was just like,
that's what it looks like, right?
You know, I gave you this story. What else do you want? Blood? Yeah, probably.
So there's a dead end. I mean, how much farther can I get? I, you know, we can't. If someone showed me a box of stone or refuse that they said came from a UFO, I mean, what would I do with it? I guess you could take it and have it analyzed, which apparently they did at some point, somebody did, but it's hard to say whether what they had analyzed was actually what Dahl had or not. So I just don't know. And my curiosity sort of leaves the arena when I don't have another avenue to pursue other than just, you know, trying to figure it out through my imagination, which to me isn't reporting at that point.
That's not reporting. Yeah, that's fiction. Yeah. Well, that's why I ask, because, you know, when people who aren't reporters go into this and they're more looking for maybe a glory angle of what's a good little gossip thing? What do we throw in here? Then they ask a question and that question becomes a story by virtue of doing something that is, I think, a disservice. And miscreating a fact. There's one that was today. There was in the feed where they've retitled something, and it's an error. It says this was at the UN, a UN report. Well, no, it isn't. It's retitled, but the information gets your attention because it puts this incorrect title, and then the story goes a whole different direction. So you're not doing that, and that's what I like about it. You're just saying, this is what I got. Now, when you follow up, when you're going to try and talk with Harold Dahl's daughter, mm-hmm. is that upcoming in the, you know, like next 2 or 3 months? Are we going
to? I should talk to her either this week or certainly by next week. Of course, she's 80 some years old, and her son, who's great. Oddly enough, her son's first name is Pasco. And that's one of the cities in the Tri-Cities, which is where Kennewick is. So, but
you just can't get away from it. Huh?
Can't get away from it. It just keeps. And I brought this up to him, and he's like, "Well, that was my great great grandfather's name." Blah, blah, blah. That's funny. I do want to touch on the document part, or how do you what the difference between what I do, what I hope is real journalism, even if it touches on these third rail issues of aliens and UFOs and spiritual matters.
And pot.
What I try to find is, that the baseline of reality that I can say is, this is certainly as real as you can get something. So it's a document, an image, a statement from somebody who knew the person or the person themselves. You know, I try to find that connection with actual reality. And for instance, one of the things I do a lot that's very popular on our big science blog is when people say they see weird things on Mars, whether it's a something that looks like a statue or something that looks like a foreign object that wouldn't normally be there or these kinds of things. The thing that I do is I don't just say, hey, Joe Blow thought that they saw, you know, Sasquatch on Mars, which is one of the images. What I do is I don't just do the problem was that people can say anything. Mm-hmm. So if I feel like it's something that people would be, you know, it's just something they would click on while they're sitting in their office, wasting time waiting for lunch. And so what I try to do is I try to find out, is there actually an image with this in it, a real image with this in it? So I don't take somebody's image they have on their website and say, look at this image. I go to NASA's website. Sometimes can take an hour, hour and a half, but I'll go through and find the actual photo, the raw photo on NASA's website, and I'll blow it up and I'll look to see if this formation that someone is saying is such and such is in it. And if it's not there, then I just don't do it because they just made it up wholesale. But if there's this weird light on a stick, a rock, or something that looks like a fun, like it looks like a finger, one piece of rock looked like a finger. Mm-hmm. If that's in the actual image itself, then I'll write about it, and then it's fun. And to me, you know, it's citizen scientists doing the same thing that NASA scientists are doing. They're just looking for life outside of the planet.
Yeah.
And they're using photographs, and NASA scientists are using whatever the rover can stick in its gullet and give a spectrograph of. And so... So to me, it's legitimate on the human level at that level, but there's got to be that, there just has to be that core piece of information that's really real.
Well, and that's the whole thing behind this particular story, is that there were a lot of threads. Whether you could track them down was questionable, because this is 1947, and it's a long time has passed. So, but getting the right person to do this, I think, is crucial. And anybody could have taken this story and not had the same results that you have. So the thing for me with these coincidences and synchronicities say to me, there's more going on in your life and your dots are connecting in a bigger way that has yet to play out. I'm hoping that you'll take the challenge and go where it isn't comfortable in investigating some of these third rail topics, as you call them, because that's where the mystery and the fun and the unexpected is waiting to be discovered. And you just have to do it. Just gotta get you on this job.
All right, I'll work. I'm gonna continue on the Harold Dahl thing. Well, that's for sure.
Yeah,
but you know, I'm interested in general. I'm generally interested. I study philosophy. I have a BA in philosophy. I read philosophy still. My personal interests. I like, you know, whether we're just an animal making all this stuff up. That in itself is miraculous. I mean,
well, it's, you know, the holograph, you know, it's okay. Well, this is what I need in my world and it's not here. And right. by golly, I thought about it and all of a sudden it appeared. Right. I want to ask about, Agent Wilcox's daughter. How old is she?
I believe I got this right. She's 40. I think she said she was 39. So she's just 40. So she would have been a later arrival in their life.
Okay. My suggestion would be, since she feels like she's in the need, the protector role, that she needs to, for some reason, be distanced from this, if you would leave her with, whenever you are ready to talk, if there is anything further you would like to add, and even if that's on your deathbed, you know, when you are ready, could you please write something up and put it in a safety deposit box? Because I think if there's more to this story, it would certainly be worth hearing coming from you. And that way, you leave it open. It may or may not happen, but there's the opportunity, because it sounds to me like she feels there's something that she needs to just dodge. She needs to step aside and say, no comment. And if her dad, if she felt like he was there doing that, then there may be something else that would be harmful to somebody else living at this point for her to put her dad in that picture. That's how dicey this particular topic still is. If you say you really believe in aliens, the disclaimer, the discrediting, the jokes, all that stuff, all that comes out. And so it's a scary place when you have, I'm assuming she has a legit job somewhere and she's trying to say, you know, my dad was normal, he was okay, and I'm not going to go there. But in the same frame, if she knows something, she may want to talk eventually.
Yeah, and it may just be that she, you know, right, I mean, the other side of it is that she may just actually have such a deep care for her dad that she doesn't want to do anything that would disappoint him if he was around alive. Yeah. And of course, she clearly feels that he's a big part of her life now still, obviously.
Well, or disappoint the department. When you're involved in that kind of element, then it is my opinion only that then there is a standard that you are held to, and your family falls into that, okay? So they're the guardians. And so if she feels like that would somehow shed a negative light in whatever he was involved in the department, then that's also worth protecting. But when there's no more risk and there's no more potential for the living to be colored by this information, and we finally say, yeah, there's something else going on here, we're going to admit to, this is why all the people who have high official clearance are now coming out on record and saying, hey, folks, could you please just give it the benefit of a doubt? Because they're saying they've had experiences. And I'm talking with Leslie Kane's book, UFOs. The one where the generals and the high officials are saying, look, this is what we have documented. This isn't just conjecture. And with this kind of a story, though, it has a full fleshing out of the whole experience. I think they did a good job with it. I also think it isn't over yet.
Yeah. And I will point out that the along those same lines, that what I try to tell people who are sources in stories is that I am going to... So typically you go to someone and they don't want to talk, and you make it clear. There's this the dividing line. either they are going to be a part of the story and you're giving them the opportunity to respond, or you're not sure if they're going to be a part of the story. It just depends on what they say. If they fall into that second category, then if they just don't want to talk, then it just sort of stops at that point. But if they're going to be in the story kind of regardless, then mm-hmm. I always try to tell them, if you say no comment, you might as well put candy out for kids on the street. I don't know what metaphor you want, but there is no, no comment or not talking about it spurs much more mystery typically.
That's the government. It's just like, guys, you're just going, come and get me. Because if there were something official to be said to write it off, it would be offered. But if there's something more that we're not going to say or we don't intend to say at this time, then no comment pretty much fills in that blank. It's like, and then the truth is out there. Just waiting, lurking.
Yeah. And then that's where conspiracies come from. People ask me, you run into people all the time who have big, broad conspiracy theories, and I get letters from people that are clearly disturbed, but they're 10-page, perfectly punctuated, perfectly written,
coherent, disturbed, yes,
coherent, clearly schizophrenic letters, mm-hmm. So I mean, I used to cover the University of Washington, just because they're really smart people doesn't mean they don't create conspiracies. And people will say, well, don't you think there are conspiracies out there? I'm like, well, absolutely there are. There are absolutely right now people who are trying to run the government. Right? I mean, that's what we do. there are conspiracies. The president is involved in a conspiracy to improve his power base, and so that the next election they can take Congress over. So to me, there are conspiracies. There's people who are making choices all the time to try to change how the public views certain topics.
Mm-hmm. To skew the media and to skew the whatever is in focus at the time, and then how that plays out, and then to go back and kind of shift it a different direction if it misfires. Yes.
So how do you tell the difference between a crazy conspiracy and one that's really happening? And I feel like as a reporter, I take that question seriously. I don't think I have the answer, but I have tools that I try to use to keep from falling into something that's just somebody's imagination.
Mm-hmm. And that's a fine line, especially when you're going in. I like the way the third rail.
Right.
Was that close to the derail or the, the thing with that is that you have to know who you are and be comfortable and confident in your ability to connect the dots. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that, and we do it. We do it every day. I'm not a believer myself, but when I am talking with someone, they say, well, not belief is a belief. My general feeling is that, well, we absolutely, there's this thread of belief that runs through everything. When I push the button on a remote control, there's a belief in there that my TV is going to come on. And if it doesn't come on, then there's a further belief that there's a reason for it not coming on. There's some sort of mechanical thing. And yet those are beliefs, and we are living in a, this is my personal philosophy here, but I mean, we are living in a reality that's rife, run straight through with belief in every aspect of our lives. And so again, it's that dividing line. When is a belief really unreasonable? Like say there are fairies at the bottom of my garden, which is a phrase from one philosopher. And when is a belief absolutely, a very strong, a very reasonable belief to have, such as the sun is going to rise tomorrow. And I like that difference. And I think that drives a lot of my reporting, I guess is all I'm saying. I like to look at it that way.
I want to ask you one last thing. The most incredible, outrageous, unbelievable experience you've ever had. Have you had something that totally just blew your mind and you couldn't figure out how it made sense, aside from the finding the woman that you found when you were going the wrong direction and you thought you were going the right direction? Is there anything anomalous that stood out that made you think twice?
Nothing that I could say I saw with my own eyes. I've never seen a ghost. I've never seen myself a UFO. My grandmother, I woke up one morning, we were in the mountains fishing and with my mom and my grandmother, and I go out there with the bacon and the trout and cooking in the frying pan on an open fire, and that'll wake you up. That's a fantastic smell. And she said, I just saw my first UFO. I just flew right overhead and landed over the hill over there. And I, as a young person, I went across the little river there and ran over to the side of the hill to see if I could see if it landed or something. And but other than that, I mean, I've had just a lot.
Wait. Do you believe your grandmother?
Sorry, it's a good question. I don't know. I don't think that she would just make it up. She was the most literal-minded person you could possibly want to meet, who spoke her. There was no filter between her literal sense of the world and what she said. So
no so filters. Describes
right.
it.
I would say that she absolutely saw something. Absolutely. No doubt about it.
And the neighborhood you were in was where when she saw that?
This was in the mountains in the middle of Montana, in the Little Snowies.
Okay.
It's called the North Fork of the Little Snowies. It's a little creek there with full of brook trout.
Okay.
So there
you go. There's a UFO connection that nobody would have even tagged to you, even though it's your grandmother. And gee, the dates of 1947 and grandma's birth and grandma's generation and...
Well, that's just it. The word is a star. I mean, I've also felt in my life periods of time where very strongly, like I'm going to meet so-and-so when I walk around this corner, and there they are. Strangers, I mean, people that I haven't seen in years, I've run into knowing I was going to run into them. I have those experiences in my life where I can't say that my feeling about them is that they're just coincidence.
My opinion is that you wouldn't be as good a reporter if you didn't have that gut, if you didn't have that sense and were willing to follow it. Some people, they're good reporters, but they don't follow their gut. They're like, they don't do the time. They don't trust that they're not going to know until they get there. They're not going to know until they hit the right moment that the lead shows up and gives them the answer. You do that. So all these little dots around you, the synchronistic elements that are saying, you're on the right path. I don't know what path you're on, but it's looking pretty interesting.
Well, I'll keep updating.
Well, I hope so. We're trying to give you a plug here because this is like, come on, follow this guy. He's digging up dirt and it's got wings. You know, this stuff is real. And so that's the thing that you did. You did such a great service by being willing to say, well, does this add up? Can I find this guy? And then going on and continuing to pursue the other people who were involved. It's the people who make the stories. The stories are just the earmark or the sensation, but it's the people behind the stories that give us how we are dealing with this in our right now, our social context, our awareness. What does this bring to the equation? It makes us begin to look at a bigger picture than what's on the table for dinner tonight, or who's the biggest celebrity and who makes the most money. It's like, what else is happening? And you are right there in the middle with this particular story, stirring the pot, so to speak.
Right.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. You're used to that by now, I'm sure.
Yeah. I have to, when I send people an email, I keep forgetting to take off that I'm the editor of the pop blog. And so, like, I just did a piece on trove of 10,000 year old tools was found in a spot near Seattle, archaeological dig. And I sent the guy a note saying, hey, I want, it's pictures, love to talk to you about this. And his response was, well, it's not going to be in the pop blog, is it?
That's right there with the third rail thing too, right now, but it's part of this is our culture. This is where we are right now, and dealing with all of these elements that bring us to different levels of philosophy, of ideas, of creation. That's what it's all about. And so darn good job on this story. I really, thanks, really appreciate you giving me the time to talking about it. And I'm looking forward to reading more of what you uncover as you continue to do your job.
Thanks.
Excellent.
It should be out. Should be out by next week sometime. I mean, you know, I say that, and then it's another week after that. But we're shooting for the next couple of weeks to have a quick little follow up about the people involved.
Okay, and since this blog, or I'm sorry, podcast runs in perpetuity, I'm going to put a date on it. Right now we're talking, it's March 25th, 2015. So if you hear it when it's a repeat, you'll know just to go Google.
Right.
All right.
And you're hopefully
Googling
it'll be
Jake
there by
Ellison
there.
At Seattle High. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So hopefully it'll be there by there. I'm sorry, hopefully it'll be then. Gosh darn it. Hopefully it will be up by then.
I know. You're right. That's why. You can do that editing thing, and it's brilliant. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. Get back to work, Jake. And the truth is out there. Just keep your eyes on the skies, okay? Because Grandma may be popping back in to say, hey, look, Pluto's fabulous. It is really a planet, guys. I'm sorry, but it really is.
Well, I look forward to hearing from her if she does. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thank
Enjoy
you.
Enjoy the conversation. Yeah, cheers.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. Remember, imagination is incredible. Gift. Sometimes the truth trumps imagination. All right? See ya.